Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 12, Dhruva Maharaj goes back to Godhead. His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, the great sage Maitreya continued, Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Please repeat after me. The great sage Maitreya continued. Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, we should mark how dutiful Dhruva Maharaj was in his devotional service. Even at the time he left this material world, he was constantly alert in performance of devotional service, in performance of devotional duties. Every devotee should take his bath early in the morning and decorate his body with tilak. In Kali Yuga, one can hardly acquire gold or jeweled ornaments, but the 12 tilak marks on the body are sufficient as auspicious decorations to purify the body. Since Dhruva Maharaj was living at that time at Badrik Ashram, there were other great sages there. He did not become puffed up because the airplane sent by Lord Vishnu was waiting for him. As a humble Vaishnava, he accepted blessings from all the sages before riding on the plane brought by the chief of the Vaikuntha associates. The great sage Maitreya continued, Maharaj Dhruva was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When he heard the sweet speeches of the Lord's chief associates in the Vaikuntha planet, he immediately took his sacred bath, dressed himself with suitable ornaments, and performed his daily spiritual duties. Thereafter, he offered his respectful obeisances to the great sages present there and accepted their blessings. So, Dhruva Maharaj is going back home, back to Godhead. So, when the time came for Dhruva Maharaj's release from the material bondage, Vaikunthapati, Krishna, or Urukrama, as he has been described here, sent his celestial spaceship. He sent his aeroplane with two of his associates to bring Dhruva Maharaj back to the spiritual sky. So this is the ultimate benefit of rendering devotional service. Devotional service means to develop our heartfelt love for the Supreme Personality of God. Jai Shri Shri Radha Radhanath, Shriman Mahaprabhu ki. By rendering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, one becomes free from all material contamination. that covers one's consciousness. And due to that covering of consciousness, or due to the contamination in the heart, a conditioned soul mistakes his identity to be his body. He mistakes his body to be his self. But as one renders devotional service, his spiritual identity begins to separate from his material covering, material body. In this respect, Prabhupada gives the example, just as a ripe coconut becomes separated from the coconut itself. The inner pulp of the coconut becomes separated from the coconut shell. But when the coconut is in the tree, then the shell, then the pulp is sticking to the shell. It's one with the shell. Have you seen green coconut? Inside of a green coconut? What is there? The green coconut, the shell of the pulp of the coconut sticks to the shell of the coconut. But when the coconut is picked from the tree, then the coconut pulp begins to separate from the body, from the coconut shell. Although straight away we do not notice that the pulp is separated from the shell, but the process actually begins. That gradually the process of separation actually starts. Similarly, when one begins his devotional service, the spirit soul begins to separate from the material body. And if one continues to render devotional service without deviation, then in due course of time, the pulp of the coconut will become separated from the coconut shell. And when it is separate, when it is ripe, fully ripe, when the coconut becomes dry completely, then when you shake the coconut, then you can hear that it's the inside of the coconut is actually separate. It makes a sound. So similarly, by following the process of devotional service, the spirit soul begins to become separated from the material body. And then when one becomes a pure devotee, then he becomes completely separated. The spirit soul of a pure devotee is completely separated from his material body. Although he is in the body, although he is functioning as a normal living entity, but actually his spirit soul is completely separated from his body. He doesn't have any contact with the body. And we discussed that in the other day, the class I gave. What is that state called? When a living entity is completely liberated but still residing within his body. That state is called Jivan Mukta stage. Jivan Mukta means, although he is Jivita, although he is alive in this material, apparently material body, but he is Mukta. Mukta means liberated. And for him, then it is only a question of when the body will fall. This body is actually a bondage. How this body is a bondage? We see that as long as we have the body, we have so many demands of the body. We have to fulfill so many demands of the body. Actually, to keep the body and soul together is a big hassle. Right? The basic needs you consider, you have to eat. As long as you have the body, you have to eat. And so much time goes in making arrangements for our food. A good part of our life actually is spent, first of course is in sleeping, and then in eating. When you eat, then you have to die. First of all, to eat the food, you have to prepare the food. And even to prepare the food, you have to buy the food. To buy the food, we need money. And to make money is not an easy job in this world. And especially when the when the societies have become so complex. In the Vedic time, it was not so difficult to maintain oneself. Just as it's not difficult for the birds to maintain themselves. The bird father doesn't think, oh, now my babies are born. Like, I have to make proper arrangements for them. And then I have to send them to the school. And a good school costs big money. So I have to save the money for them, their education. So in this way, the birds or those who are living in nature, they actually do not have any problem for maintenance. But human society created such complexity that to survive in the society, one practically has to work for 48 hours a day. Like people, they don't have enough. They are always in need of money. And then what happens when people need money, but money is not so readily available? Then people become criminal. They kill people, they rob people. So we can see this human society has become so complex because of so-called civilization of human beings. And nowadays, to survive, a man has to work very hard to pay for his rent, pay for his bond, pay for his food, pay for so many things. But if we consider, if we were in nature, if we are not so much, like, let us go back. We don't even have to go very far back. If we go back even 40, 50 years, Lokabandhu Prabhu, how was the condition? Much simpler. I noticed when I was young, things were so much easier. It was not so complex, like simple. Everything was so easily available. And if one went to the village, then he didn't have to buy anything for his food. In the villages, practically, I spent some time in a village when I was in a small town, actually. This can be considered as a village when you're young. And there, the markets, the markets are used to open only for 2 days a week. And people used to come from distant places with their merchandise, mainly vegetables, etc. And they would sit there in one area, and there people would come and the transaction would go on. And so whatever people needed, they had to just buy twice a week. And most of the houses in the villages had their patch of vegetables, fruits. So practically everything came from the vegetable patch. But now you consider how difficult it has become. And as devotees we notice how complex this society is. Society has become, especially its financial condition, the financial arrangement. Like, the people say there are so many industries and so many outlets for employment. And so everybody is employed, practically. And they are getting a lot of money. And so the rent of houses have gone up. Incredibly. The prices of commodities have gone up incredibly. Like, I remember even just a few years back, in India, say, a kilo of potato used to cost about 50-60 paisa. 50-60 paisa means 5 cents. You call it sentient? 5 sentient. A cabbage or a cauliflower, a big one, used to cost about 2.5 sentient. 25 paisa. I remember a kilo of mango used to be 25 paisa. But now you see how it has become. In India, I think kilo of potatoes are now 5 rupees. Things have gone up 10,000%, the prices. But the salary of people didn't actually increase to that proportion. But the necessities have increased so much. Those days, no one used to think of buying a color TV or a VCR. If somebody had a radio, it was considered that it was a luxury. And there was no question of TV. Once in a while, people used to go to the movies. And in the evening, people used to sit together, in the village I'm talking about, people used to sit together and chant Hare Krishna. I have seen that. Of course, I was not aware of this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna movement those days. But I used to see people used to chant in the evening. They would, very melodious tune, they used to chant. And that was the recreation. Another recreation was to listen to Srimad Bhagavatam or Puranas. Some kathak, some person would tell the stories. And that was actually very, very interesting. Because those people, they had a very beautiful way of narrating. Because most of them are good singers and have very good command over the language. Also they knew the topic. I remember as a child, my aunt used to recite Ramayana and Mahabharata. And that was another very interesting pastime. Like when the little children became naughty, they were creating too much disturbance, then this widow aunt of mine, she used to gather us together and tell us the stories from Mahabharata. And we would just become peaceful. But nowadays, the whole thing has changed so much. And we can see that in the name of civilization, in the name of advancement, this world actually has become very, very complex. Yeah, as I was telling, like the devotees, like often in the Prabhupada used to say that a householder needs just about 1/2 acre of land and 2 cows to maintain himself. But we are seeing that in today's world, it is not possible. In today's world, it is not possible to just maintain with 1/2 acre of land and 2 cows. Because the whole structure has become so complex. Nowadays, we notice that the devotees who do not actually have any source of income, most of the devotees, those who are fully surrendered to the temple, practically most of them don't have any source of income. And they depend upon the temple to maintain them. But to maintain a household in a big city, like to give an example, in the city of London, to rent an apartment costs you £800. The cheapest one probably you'll get for £500. Now consider £500 means 3,000 rand, just on rent. What to speak of other expenses? Now, for a devotee who doesn't actually have a lot of money in the bank and doesn't want to go out and accept a karmi job, it becomes so difficult. How is he going to maintain himself? But in India, in a country like India, say 50-60 years ago, That was not at all a problem. Somebody could just have a small little hut, and most of the people in India used to live in huts. And the climatic condition in India is so nice that one can live anywhere. One can even live like the sadhus, they used to live under trees most of the time. Or trees or in some temple. Like when the sadhus travel, what they do is they just go to some temple. When they travel, they will just go to some temple and everything would be arranged for it. Every temple would have some guest room or dharmashala. They call it dharmashala. And these dharmashalas are free for the sadhu. Like we have experiences whenever we go to, sometimes we went to places of pilgrimage like Haridwar, Rishikesh. And I remember one time we were about 10-12 devotees and we thought of renting a place in a dharmashala. They told me that there is a very nice dharmashala. There are many, many dharmashalas. So we just went to one dharmashala. So there is a manager. He was actually sitting in the office. So we went, very respectful person. And so when I asked him, so how much is going to cost per room? Then he asked me, what are you saying? Do you think we are going to take money from you? and this is this used to be the attitude. Like in temples, it's all free for sadhu. Not only they gave us the room, they gave us the bhoga also. They gave us rice, vegetables. They told us what we need, including even milk. And so in this way, the sadhus used to be taken care of. And the householders also used to be very, very accommodating. I remember another incident. Like there was, at one time, I was traveling with some devotees, with six devotees in North India, in Punjab. And we were just walking from village to village. We just go from one village to another village. And just walking. And so normally we would just stop at, now we'd go to a village and every village would have a temple. And we would just settle in the temple. Just sit there. And in no time the word would get around that, you know, sadhus have come. And people would come running to see us. They would sit around us. They would ask where we're coming from, etc., etc., who we are. And then they would bring the ingredients, rice, dal, sabji. And they would also light the fire, cut the vegetable. And they know that the sadhus won't eat others' cooking, so they would allow us to cook. So this is how simple life used to be. And especially those who are leading spiritual life. For example, I'm sure you remember the incidents of Mrigari and Narad Muni. Mrigari the hunter, coming in contact with Narad Muni, gave up his hunting, gave up killing animals. He was transformed. But he had a doubt, he questioned, he wondered, how is he going to maintain himself now? Narad Muni said, don't worry about it, I will take care of you. And what happened? The word got around that Mrigari became a saint. And people just became curious to see that Mrigari, the saint. So they used to come to see him. And in India it's a custom that whenever one comes to see a sadhu, he must bring something. And as a result of that, Mrigari didn't have any need. Everything was as if it was coming from the sky. Everything is dropping from the sky from him. And that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Srivast Thakur also. After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and went to left home, then the rest of those who were very attached to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu couldn't stay in Navadvipa because the place was so full of Mahaprabhu's memory that it was very, very painful for them. Every direction they looked, it was filled with the memories of Nimai. And their heart was breaking. So Srivast Thakur left Navadvipa with his family. And he settled down in a place called Kumarhatta. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to Vrindavan, he stopped at Srivast Thakur's house in Kumarhatta. And he asked Srivast Thakur casually, "So Srivast, how do you maintain yourself?" Srivast said, I don't want to care about my family. I don't feel like taking care of family, earning money." And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Srivast that, "Srivast, Lakshmi Devi may go out begging from door to door, but there won't be any scarcity in your house." So that's the assurance that the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave to his devotees. The devotees don't have to worry. Like, everything will be provided. And it is said that things used to just come to Srivast Thakur's house, just without any arrangement, without any endeavor. But of course, now the times have changed. In one hand, our devotion is not that strong, and the society has become very complex. Therefore, naturally the devotees feel the anxiety. "Oh, how am I going to maintain my family?" And that is the problem with the demoniac civilization. In this demoniac civilization, all kinds of unnecessary arrangements are made for their so-called comfortable living. And as a result of that, people suffer very much. But as Krishna consciousness spreads, these complexities will begin to reduce. And finally, a time will come when this place will become like Vaikuntha, and there won't be any scarcity. Like, there may not be, we may not have desire trees, but we will have plenty of Vaishnavas all around who, like desire trees, will fulfill all the desires of people. And especially the Vaishnava king. Actually, the perfect situation for the world is to have a Vaishnava king, Vaishnava ruler on top of the whole world, the ruling the whole, controlling the entire world. And what does the Vaishnava king do? What does he do? The Vaishnava king takes care of everyone's need. Like, what does everybody want? And he would provide. And the kings like Dhruva Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, Bharat Maharaj, Rishabh Dev, Agnitra, Nabhi, they were kings like that. They were all saintly personalities. They were actually, externally they were kings. But internally, they were sages. So they were externally dressed like a king, but actually they were sages. Now, can you imagine what's going to happen to the world when personalities like that rule the world? To begin with, they do not have any personal motivation. They do not have any personal interest for material arrangement. They have accepted the role out of duty. And they utilize all the arrangements, all the facilities. Actually, there is no scarcity in the nature. There is plenty, there is everything in abundance. Prabhupada often used to give the example that in the nature we never see anyone dying of starvation. Like you don't see a bird dying of starvation, or an elephant which needs about 100 kilos of food every day. Still, even an elephant doesn't starve to death. But the scarcity is there only in the human society. And that scarcity in the human society has been created by human beings. It's not that Krishna created this scarcity in the human society. Krishna gave everything in abundance. But the human beings, as they put the stamp of their proprietorship on Krishna's property, on Krishna's nature, then the problem starts. And to make that point, Srila Prabhupada gives an example. That take a bag of rice and put it in the middle of the road at night. In the morning, some birds will come and eat as much as they need, they'll fly away. Then some cows or goats will come, they will also eat as much as they need, then they'll go. But the first man comes, he'll pick up the whole bag and walk away. So this greed of man is causing this scarcity in the human society. But let us consider what the Vedic society used to be like. This is also an example from Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada is saying that in the Vedic society, the householders used to go out on the street after the offering was made. And he would make an announcement. Is there anyone? No, the offering has been made to the Lord in my house. Is there anyone who is hungry? So please come and honor the prasad in my house. Now if the householders have such generous attitude, can there be any scarcity in the society? Or at least we can consider that, will anyone starve in that society? No. If anyone is hungry around noontime, like he will hear someone saying, anyone going hungry, please come and have prasad in my house. So that is how a perfect human society should be like. And if Krishna consciousness prevails all over the world, then the world situation will become like that. No one will go hungry. And everyone will have plenty. Actually, there is everything in abundance in this world. Prabhupada once told also that just Australia alone has enough resources to feed the whole world. Just one continent, that's also the smallest continent, has the resources to feed the whole world. And what to speak of America and other European countries. In Europe, I know, like every year, they burn a huge amount of butter just to keep the price of butter down. And so much grain is just thrown in the ocean. In Germany, the farmers are given money, and also in France, the farmers are given money not to cultivate their land. If you don't cultivate your land, then the government will pay you money. So what a demoniac arrangement. In one hand, they are saying there is so much scarcity in the world, but at the same time, they don't let people produce. And if you call them demon after that, they get upset. Therefore, it is very, very important that this Krishna consciousness movement spread. And the spreading of Krishna consciousness movement depends upon two factors. One is the devotees following Srila Prabhupada's instruction very, very sincerely and trying to offer this teaching to others around them. We ourselves must practice Srila Prabhupada's teaching and we must preach to others. And if just these two functions go on, then in due course of time, Krishna consciousness will spread. Like as people read Prabhupada's books, sincere people at least will become influenced by them. Sincere people are going to become influenced by Srila Prabhupada's books. I heard Nelson Mandela is reading Prabhupada's books. Although he didn't really make it known to us as yet, but from some reliable sources, we heard that Nelson Mandela has been seen going around with the Signs of Self-Realization in his hand. That means whenever he got some spare time, he was reading. And also, he was in one place, I don't know where, and when he left and they were cleaning the room, they found a bunch of Back to Godhead magazines. So somebody must have given him the magazine and he is reading. So in this way, sincere people, good people, will become influenced by Srila Prabhupada. And this is how potent Srila Prabhupada's books are. The other day in Cape Town, Dr. James was telling me that one person called Nicholas called the temple. And I think Krishna Priya answered the phone. And he just started to tell that he wants to meet the members of our society. So she asked whether she met any before. He said no. But he said that he is following. He is reading Prabhupada's books and he is following. So then Krishna Priya wanted James to speak to him. And James and they spoke for hours together. Now, in brief, this person just came across a book of Srila Prabhupada. Oh no, maybe I can tell you before. Go back a little more. He was held up by a mug. By a mugger. And then he was actually shot at point blank range. And no one knows how he actually survived. The doctors were amazed to see that he survived. And they don't know how he actually survived, but it damaged his brain. The bullet passed through his brain or some area of his head, which did not touch the delicate parts of the brain. But as a result of that, his body is temporarily paralyzed. He was in the hospital for many years, for a long time. And somehow he came across Srila Prabhupada's books. And as he started reading Prabhupada's books, like he became more and more concerned, more and more influenced by that. And then he realized that actually he has some mission to fulfill. That's why the Lord made him survive such an accident. And that's why he got in touch with the devotees and he told James that he feels that he has a mission. His life was not supposed to end at that time. Krishna wanted him to do something for him. And this man, although he never met a devotee, although he was practically lying in his deathbed, became a devotee just by reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Yeah, and then he had Prabhupada's dreams twice already. Twice he had dreams of Srila Prabhupada, received his instruction. He is, and he is following all the principles. He also made an altar, according to Prabhupada's description. Made an altar, offers arati, offers his food, became a vegetarian. So I became very curious to meet this person. So I got to know the day before I was leaving Cape Town. So I told James that I would like to meet this person. And he wanted to come to the temple. So they went and got that person. And I found him to be a very, very nice person. And he's a devotee. I mean, when he walked in, you know, I could see he's a devotee. Now this is how powerful Srila Prabhupada's books are. And this is how Srila Prabhupada's books are working. Like so many billions of books have gone out. And people at some point in time are going to read these books. And the books are going to, and Krishna is going to work from within. Just as it happened in most of our cases. We got the books and then Krishna acted from within. Gave us the Buddhi Yoga. Gave us the intelligence to appreciate Srila Prabhupada's books. And that was the end of our material life. And today we may think, well, it's happening to only few of us. But it will happen in a time, with the passing of time. Some, just as today, Nelson Mandela is reading Prabhupada's books. And many state presidents will be reading Prabhupada's books and become influenced. And will consider that this is actually the right thing. This is what, this is the process that must be accepted by the human society. And that's how actually the religion spread. Like Christianity started to spread due to Constantine. Prior to that, Christians were living in catacombs, thrown in the mouth of the lion. That's how they were being persecuted. But then Constantine came and he established Christianity. So, similarly, during Chaitanya, soon after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, the next generation, Srinivas Narottam and Shyamananda Prabhu, when they were preaching, they had big patronage from the king. King Hambir patronized Srinivas Thakur. Narottam Das Thakur's family was actually the king. And plus they got the patronage of many other. Many kings became influenced by him. Also the king of Manipur was influenced by a disciple of Narottam Das Thakur. He went and preached to the king. And then the king made Vaishnavism the religion of the state and patronized thoroughly. What he did, he got the Gaudiya Vaishnavs from, come from Bengal and educate, teach them. They had a bhakta program, nationwide bhakta program, run by the Vaishnavas who were imported from Bengal. So if we sincerely try to practice this process ourselves and try to preach, try to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books, then this Krishna consciousness will spread with a tremendous speed all over. Here we know that all kinds of miracles can take place. Prabhupada used to say that these so-called Bhagavan, they are showing us some miracles. What they are doing, what they are producing, they're producing some ash. They can't even produce some cash. All they produce is some ash, and people follow them. Think that this is Bhagavan because he's producing some ash. But Prabhupada used to say that the greatest miracle actually is that I have shown the miracle. My miracle is that I have spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. I have made the people from all kinds of degraded background become saints. So why don't they try to show this kind of miracle? And actually that is the greatest miracle that the world has ever seen. Krishna consciousness spread within 10 years time all over the world, practically in every big city. And if we follow Srila Prabhupada's footsteps, if we sincerely try to serve Srila Prabhupada, if we carry on Srila Prabhupada's mission, then it will happen. All over the world, Krishna consciousness will spread. Now it will spread further and further. Like, now it has spread only to the big cities, but then it will spread to all the towns, and then finally to all the villages. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction will be fully fulfilled. And we can rest assured that Mahaprabhu's words are not going to go in vain. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when he says that in every town and village, it'll literally happen. When Mahaprabhu says every town and village, it'll literally happen to every town and village all over the world. Krishna consciousness will spread. Now, if we line up with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we will also be a part of a great mission. If we line up with Srila Prabhupada, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we will also be a part of a glorious achievement. And everybody wants to live in a world which is wonderful in all respects. And that will only happen when Krishna consciousness spreads all over the world. So thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any comment or question? Yes, I will.
Maharaj, also, there's so much population. And it means that, especially like a place like India, since independence, the population must have tripled now. And that makes things more difficult also. Srila Prabhupada said there's no question about overpopulation.
Exactly.
To me, it seems like a big difficulty.
You see, there is no way of knowing whether the population really increased 3 times since the war. The population in the cities have increased, no doubt. But obviously, in the villages, the population has decreased. And still, when you take a train, say from Delhi to Calcutta, what do you see on both the sides of the railway train? Does it look overpopulated? You don't even see a single soul there. So where's the question of overpopulation?
So Pundarik Vidyanidhi said that during the Industrial Revolution, the more educated people moved out of the small places into the cities. So then in the villages, in the small places, the people aren't very educated.
So there is no way of counting. I mean, who did the census before the war? Did anyone?
No, yeah.
Even if they did, they just went to some cities and counted. Oh, so this is the population city. And obviously, in the cities, the population has increased. But there is no need to worry about the population. If the population becomes too much, then nature can drop an atom bomb at any moment and take care of it. What to speak of famine or epidemic? I mean, where's the scarcity? Prabhupada used to say there's only scarcity of Krishna consciousness. There is no scarcity of anything in this world. There is scarcity only of Krishna consciousness. And in spite of so much population, we are able to feed so many people. Enough food for life. So the more the population increases, our food for life program will expand. And Prabhupada said, like, I will take care of you. You just come. Then somebody asked, how will you take care of so many people? Prabhupada said, that's none of your business. Yes? How do you go about establishing? Well, we don't need to establish a king in our society. But what the world needs is a king who can establish himself on his own right. He said the real king is not appointed. The real king establishes himself. He goes and grabs. Right? That's a kshatriya. The kshatriya doesn't stand in an election, right, to own the crown. Right? He grabs. And in that way, if a king is a weakling, then he won't be able to retain his kingdom. Some stronger king will come and take over. Right? And in this way, when the Vedic society is established, Vedic culture is established, the strongest one will dominate over all the kings of the world. And that's how in the Vedic time, one king used to rule over the entire earth. So we simply have to preach, and the real king will come. He will say, hell with democracy. And he'll say, I don't give a damn about what people think. I simply care about what Krishna thinks, what Prabhupada thinks. And that's what I'm going to do. So a powerful personality like that will come up in time, in due course of time. Nowadays, the world is not run by the powerful king. The world is being run by the cowards. And that's why the world is in a mess. But a Vedic ruler, a Krishna conscious king, he can establish the right standard all over the world. And it will happen. It will happen in due course of time. The cowards only preach for democracy. Since they are not powerful enough, they depend upon the power of the mass, the support of the mass. But a real kshatriya, he won't depend upon the mass. He knows that the mass is a bunch of dodos. So why depend upon them? They need to be ruled. They shouldn't have any voice. Now what's the point of vox populi? The mass is ignorant. What's the use of the voice of an ignorant mass? Therefore the Vedic society never promotes democracy. It proposes Krishna conscious monarchy. And see what happens in democracy? The person becomes a leader with the vote of the mass. To begin with, he has to bluff the people, right, with all kinds of promises. And then he has to sort of live in constant fear that any moment the mass can actually call his bluff and stand up against him. And even if that doesn't happen, if the common people are doing something wrong, he can't take a strict action, stern action, because then he knows that the people won't vote for him. So these democratic leaders can never become strong. And what to speak of, they never had any training. They never had any training how to rule the masses, how to direct them, or how to fight a battle. They never had any training. So what can be expected out of them? But a Kshatriya king, to begin with, he has been trained from his childhood. And plus, he has his so many lifetimes of karma behind him to come to the body of a Kshatriya. So the unfortunate thing in this age is that all people have become sudras or worse. So there is no proper Kshatriya in this age. But when the Brahmanas come, as Prabhupada, that's why we wanted to establish the Brahmanas, the Brahminical culture. And when the Brahmanas are established, now when the head is put in the right place, then the rest of the body will grow. So the Kshatriyas will come up when the Brahmanas are established.
Nelson Mandela was already a world leader when we approached him, and he became interested in Krishna consciousness. But Sridhar Maharaj was saying that by book distribution, we don't know who the next world leader might be, so that we can be distributed book to someone. In 10 years' time, they've been influenced by Prabhupada's books all these years, and then when they become a world leader, then there's a big impact on Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, that's a good idea. True. Okay, yes, Dayal Nikita.
Why doesn't the GBC encourage members to look to contest the ministerial elections to get into government?
Why don't the GBC encourage its members to get involved in politics? That's what you mean. So, you see, when we know that certain system itself is wrong, why should he be a part of that defective system? We have to change the system.
One way is to get it to the
right. No, not necessarily. Because I have to tell you frankly, the way this political system runs nowadays, what to speak of a devotee, no gentleman can actually function. Because at the back of it is all, dirty people who are manipulating. It's not that the state leaders are actually, I don't know about South Africa, just got his independence. And maybe Nelson Mandela is a different type of person, and he has been a leader who was not actually promoted by this evil system. But in other countries, for example, in America or in Europe, it's all the mafias are controlling. Big gangsters, they are actually controlling. It's not that the state president is the real state president. He is a puppet in the hands of a handful of, very, very wealthy, unscrupulous gangsters. So in a system, why should we allow our devotees to become a prey to that kind of defective system? But we are working, we are actually, what Prabhupada's system is, that the way the Kali Yuga is going, Prabhupada is going to undo the system in the same, following the same principle. The mass has the voice. So Prabhupada's policy is to distribute the books to the mass, educate the mass, and the mass is going to call their bluff and pull them down. So it will happen, it's only a matter of time. Okay, I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.